I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, Señor Nicolas Hodge, who's also an investor, publisher of Bizarro World, amongst other hats that the gentleman wears. This is the 369th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets, we're going to talk war, we're going to talk celebrating six-dimensional chess, we're going to talk the reflective pool at the White House, not being so reflective right now. Lots to get into. First and foremost, Señor Hodge, how goes you?
You got the Bizarro World this week, Gerardo, as daily profit cycle fades into the rearview mirror. I'm doing great. Summer is almost here. We will have the official tilting next week, and we'll get into the summer season. But the kids are out of school. I'm in my summer digs for the next couple of months. And again, we'll be seeing you very soon at the World Symposium, July 6th through 10th in Boca Raton. We'll continue to have the links up for that, but it's going to be a good time. How are you doing?
I am well. Summer is here. It's 95 degrees outside. My jogs are funner in the morning now. Expedited tan immediately, jogging every morning for my couple of miles. So I actually enjoy the heat. I really thrive in the summertime, and I'm a sunshine and hot weather person. So for me, this is the funnest time of the year for me. Not so much the case for others around me, like my sister, for example, who is not a huge fan of the heat, but I'm having a great time. The kids are healthy. The wife is healthy. Our middle one is settled into Alaska. The wife still loves me. She gets prettier by the day. We just celebrated 24 years yesterday of having
Congratulations.
Met. Thank you. We'll do
When's the official? When's the wedding anniversary?
The 20-year wedding anniversary will be next month.
Got it.
So in about 3 weeks' time. So, no, look, milestone after milestone. It's been kind of that year. And look, on the global stage, we have another milestone. We won again. The strait is open. The missiles and the bombs, at least from our side and from the Iran side towards us, have ceased. There is a deal that the market believes, and that's important because up until this week, the dollar and oil wasn't indicating to me that it believed the deal. It seems to believe this one. The dollar index below 100 again, sitting at 99.59. Oil down to the $76 level. That's important. That lets you know that tankers are once again flowing through that strait and that they believe, the market believes, that this will stick. Gold immediately. We said last week that we thought if it wasn't a bottom, it was damn close to a bottom. And sure enough, it's had itself a hell of a week here on the news. So back up to the 43.32 level. Silver has regained the 70 handle. The volatility index was something like, I think, 15.5 or 16 earlier today. Oil volatility is down. Gold volatility is down. Congratulations. We did it.
So the market says, I have a little bit of trepidation still. We were talking before we started recording. The details are just started to come out for a while there. Both sides were dancing around the details, and no one was willing to release. Well, last I read, and again, we're recording this early, it's not live this week, so we're recording it on the 16th, was details will be forthcoming in 24 to 48 hours. What you say is true. The market believes the deal. We'll see what happens with Israel and Lebanon. They seem to still be having an itchy trigger finger. And there's some other details that need to be resolved. Some of the things I've read said that, the last deal that was passed, the 2015 deal, was made it necessary for Congress to approve any further things that happened with Iran. So we'll see if that ends up having to be done. And yeah, we'll see how long it holds, right? We've had complete and total victory the first weekend, and that was 3 months ago. So, but everything you say is true. VIX is subdued. Dollar is still bullish, although it is below 100, as you say. I think that has more to do with the nature of inflation and then a potential slowdown in the second half of the year than maybe the war. And we're not out of the woods yet on all of the metals. The CRB commodity index has corrected now, an official correction, 10% down from the high made last month. as the softs mostly start to come down, the things that were driving it up very fast because of the fertilizer that we were talking about months ago, and things like that, the soybeans and the wheat and that sort of stuff has started to come down. And it's still the same order. I feel like a broken record, but that's partially because we just recorded one of these less than a week ago. But copper looks better than gold, looks better than silver. And on the precious metals specifically, what previously was support is now resistance. So we've got to regain some of those levels to get back to truly bullish. But they held the downside sort of breakpoints, the trend lines that we were looking at last week. Gold bounced back. And the equities bounced back pretty well as well. Like some of those gold ETFs we were mentioning last week are up. Like the GDXJ, for example, got below 100 and it was back up nearly to 115. So, you know, a 15% move in a week or so. So yeah, the market's buying it and really interested to see if it holds. I guess that's par for the course when the man cries wolf every other day, right?
Well, the details that are coming out, we spent $80 billion in this incursion or excursion, whichever he said both, right? So you pick your word. Spent $80 billion. We lost lives. We depleted our munitions. We damaged so much of our regional infrastructure. Injuries, obviously, to go along with the deaths. And then on top of that, what's being leaked and by both sides is that there would be an immediate unfreezing of $100 billion in Iranian assets and a $300 billion reconstruction fund, all being footed by us, by the taxpayer. This at a time where we're $39 trillion in debt. And what we accomplished was a weakened presence in the Middle East, a fracturing of important alliances around the world, a depletion of our war chest once again. And just to get back to where we were before this whole thing started, which is the strait being opened, and us not bombing anything and them not bombing our infrastructure in the region. So maybe it's six-dimensional chess. I'm a simple man. I pride myself on simple ideas. Maybe I just don't understand. Maybe my peasant brain just can't wrap its head around this. But I thought it highly metaphorical and highly ironic that on the 250th celebration of our great country, there was a celebration with, you know, all the circus and the gladiator stuff from ancient Rome, when the empire was declining. And here we are the day after, you know, that spectacle, and the reflecting pool doesn't reflect anymore because it's filled with algae from the paint job that they did underneath and from not treating it properly. That cost $14 million, by the way. That was a no-bid contract that was awarded to one of Trump's buddies' companies that was supposed to take care of all of that and get that done. We now also have a 1-year reconstruction of the lawn at the White House with a $1 million donation that I'm sure will be written off by Miracle-Gro. And if are they coming for us, Nick? Are they coming for
I was going to say, it's a level three evacuation.
I'm looking up at the sky here. So, look, are you safe? Are you good? Everything okay over there? I didn't know if it was you or me at first, but it wasn't me.
There's a fire somewhere, but I'll be okay,
Okay. All right.
I
So,
think.
yeah, look, man, I'm thankful for the peace. I've been hoping for peace. What's going on with Lebanon and all of that is absolutely horrible. I pray for peace in the region. Israel clearly is not happy. They've been extremely vocal. They supposedly asked to see the agreement before it was signed. The US finally said, no, you don't get to. I suspect that, you know, Trump's advisors finally sat him down and said, you're getting to the point of no return. And we had said this a few weeks back that it was only going to be a couple of more weeks before it was no longer sustainable, regardless of when it ended, right? And that it would have very, very severe economic repercussions, worse than the ones that we've already seen. And I think finally somebody, cooler heads prevailed and some logic kicked in. And they said, you're absolutely going to get our ass handed to us in the midterms if you continue with this. Like, this is absolute madness. So, You know, my next question is what, how does Israel counter? Because I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, some of the major news outlets now are reporting how much Epstein hated Trump beforehand. And you're starting to see the slow rollout of that. So I don't know if we're going to get like a false flag thing. I don't know if we're going to get the media, which, you know, is very pro-Israel, Israeli government, you know, lining up another set of Epstein documents. Or maybe nothing happens. Maybe Israel just realizes its back is against the wall. And if it wants war with Iran, go get it yourself. And again, maybe cooler heads prevail. I don't see that being the case because recent history tells me that that will not be the case, right? Going back to 1948. So we'll see. But I am thankful for peace. I am thankful that that incursion, excursion, whatever he wanted to call it, has hopefully come to an end. And I hope it sticks, man. I hope it sticks.
Yeah, like you say, peace is good for everyone. It's a shame we have to go through what we went through to get to where we are, which is back to where we started, as you sort of said. Put that in your bowl and smoke it around. But, you know, and sorry for the alarm. I guess there's a wildfire. It's a red flag day here. We are in fire season. And so somebody's got to evacuate, but I don't think it's me. You said we've met our objectives sort of with your tongue in your cheek. And then you got to where I would have gotten to. Yeah, one of the objectives is a lot fewer people are talking about Epstein and related things. I think that it was partially a diversion tactic. I think what you say is also true about it being more of an off-ramp than a true the conclusion or meeting of our objectives. I think he saw where it was headed and into a quagmire and took a deal as opposed to, you know, negotiating the art of the deal and getting everything we wanted. I think there's still a lot of skepticism. You know, I get lots of different newsletters and defense insights and things like that. And the note I got this morning was saying that there's been skepticism expressed from the CIA director. Some congressional Republicans are expressing doubt. I already told you that the last deal said that any new deal needs congressional approval. And the last bullet point I'm looking at says, and it's funny, not funny, the nuclear weapons provisions remain an open item, which was the entire point for going over there, right? So we'll see how it goes. Unfortunately, life and wealth squandered. And some of that will need to be rebuilt. So, not that it's bullish for, you know, all the things that we invest in, but I was talking a couple of weeks ago that, you know, those munitions and things that need to be rebuilt involve a lot of critical minerals. And the running up of the debt continues to be one of the major backstops of the precious metals bull market. And so, surprise, surprise, your government, especially at the federal level, is inept and potentially corrupt. And no shit, they can't do construction projects in budget or with good outcomes. It's sort of where we are with the level of institutions we have.
It's curious to me that, and I agree, the 2015, you know, deal did require congressional approval. But there was also congressional approval, I thought, when the strikes happened. And in this case, that was not the case. I don't recall this administration coming to the American public or coming to Congress and actually getting any kind of authorization to do this. They didn't do it with Venezuela. I don't recall them doing it with Iran. So they didn't
get... It's not a war. Some call it a war. I don't call it a war.
Right? I mean, if you didn't ask permission to go, why do you need a sign off to stop? It's Idiocracy, folks. Go watch the movie. I don't know how else to explain it. I was watching the highlights. I didn't watch the actual UFC fights, but I was watching the highlights of the motorcycles just going over back and forth and the people on the lawn drunk and fighting. And I had to shake my head and just giggle a little bit in a funny, not funny, laugh to not cry type of moment, right? As a very, very, very proud Mexican-American that takes pride in both my ethnicity and my nationality. I mean, I'm so thankful for the opportunities this country has afforded me. It's tough to see some of the stuff that's going on, man. But look, we're going to keep doing our little part in our corner of the world and keep contributing in however little ways we can possibly do so, whether that's with family, with friends, with community, or just by trying to be a better human every day in general. But back to what we do do, and what we do do is the markets, right? gold and silver. We talked last week about technical levels. Both clearly look like they bounced off of those technical levels that were pushing the boundaries of potential breakdown, right? Gold looked like it could break down to 38,3900. Silver looked like it could break down to that $60 level. And both got pretty close before the announcement of the MOU with Iran. Both look in the clear to me now. And I hate calling bottoms, but I said it last week. I think we're damn near close to a bottom. I think we're at a bottom.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to share the chart is the easiest way to do it.
There you go.
Let me get that up real quick. Share the screen.
Get excited, yeah. Nick. The bull market's back, baby.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it. And, you know, I told you I was buying last week when we spoke. You can see exactly what it did here. This was the trend line that we were looking at. Got dangerously close. Both days here on these candles, but never closed. It closed one day below it on a daily thing. The next day closed above it. And this is what I was saying. This is previous support here, call it 4380. Now that's sort of the level we need to recapture. That's how technicals work in that sense. The support, which was support here and support here and support here for a second. Now the support becomes resistance. We'll look for gold to recapture that level 43, as I say, 80 and change. And then we can get really back to bullish. Silver has got a little bit more work to do. And copper is still interesting. And while I have this up, I might as well show you the CRB commodities because I had mentioned that earlier. And you can't see it as well on a candle chart because it has pretty thin volume. But if I change it to a line, you can see pretty well that.
Yep.
And this is a 10% correction from 406 down to 364, where I was checking it earlier today, or 361. Is a 10% correction. And that's inside of this chart that I've shown you a ton of times, right? This super cycle that took off in 2020, consolidated throughout 2023 and 2024, took off in earnest again at the end of 2025. This is the war here, but earlier what I was talking about, the soft commodities and things. And now this is your correction after the war, sort of. This isn't an official trend line, but a healthy correction, 10% in the commodities. So with copper still holding up really well, and you know, the supply demand fundamentals looking great for copper and many other metals, which I continue to see brought to the fore. Lots of people talking about tungsten now, and you know, China not going away either. Let me hit the stop share button. But you know, I've told you about that book a couple of times, the Mineral War that I've been reading, and then I continue to see headlines like there was a report recently about, you know, China continuing to prioritize the minerals. They've assigned a new state-owned entity to start negotiating on their behalf for mineral deposits around the world. And tie that back to what you were saying about the depletion of the munitions and things like that. And that storyline or narrative isn't going away anytime soon. Europe says they want to do things about it. We were trying to get, I think, 30% of their minerals from China by 2030. Don't think that's going to happen. So a lot of work still to do and a lot of bullishness still out there in the commodity complex.
Yeah. And I'm going to use that to do a shameless plug of our services. It's summertime, folks, and people are outside and volume and liquidity has dried up a little bit. And there's not a lot of bids. Frankly, there's not a lot of selling. Classic bottoming behavior, right? You're not getting a lot of selling. There's just very few bids out there. There is a heck of an opportunity to load up at dirt cheap prices on companies that have exposure to both precious metals and critical metals within both Nick and I's portfolios. And again, I think we're going to look back in December at prices today in June and shake our heads why we didn't use the boring. I keep saying the boring is the opportunity to load up, or at the very least, you know, hold through the summer and let the summer doldrums kind of play out. I think there's a lot of great exploration going on out there. And I think companies that are successful are going to see themselves very richly rewarded. I also see gold and silver having a heck of a second half of this year. I think the worst is behind us. There was a poll that was done with all the central banks. All but one said they're either buying gold in the second half of this year, adding to their holdings, or holding their holdings. Only one central bank said it would need to sell some of its gold to fund some of its commitment. So, some of the selling pressure during this war was because of the fact that margin calls happen, redemptions happen, and look, if your oil money dries up, you gotta sell something to take care of the bills and take care of your necessities, right? If this deal actually holds up and it's not sabotaged, that's very, very good for gold. The last thing I'll say is Kevin, our new Fed head, will be giving a speech tomorrow, and we're gonna get the first peek into the window of his brain, and it's gonna go one or two ways. I think he's either gonna be cautious in his tone, cautiously hawkish, because that's what the data suggests he should be, right? Or he's gonna show his true colors and going to come out and say, I believe that with inflation now coming down as a result of this war being over and input costs starting to retreat to normalized levels and employment starting to slow down, that the conditions could be met later in the year for a potential rate cut. I know that's not the popular view. I know that's not what the betting odds say. We're going to find out tomorrow, but it's going to be one of two things. He's either going to be mildly hawkish, which is what he should be, by the way. Or he's going to start setting the table for a later in the year cover to possibly reduce cut rates again. So we'll see. It's going to be what it's going to be. We know what he was brought in to do. He's brought in to cut rates.
I was going to bring it to the Fed too, and I'll share my screen just one more time. So we talked about this last week. What can the Fed do? They're going to try to jawbone it down, the rates I'm talking about. I was saying that, they can't, he can't do it unilaterally. He's going to have the votes. But now oil's at $70, and we just got a 4.2% print on the monthly inflation for May. It's going to go down from there. You're going to get disinflation for June, and likely July, depending on what happens with this truce or ceasefire or whatever you want to call it. But you likely have a short-term peak in for inflation and also for rates. If you look at the 10-year yield and you look at the 2-year yield, they've come down a bit from where they were in the past 2 or 3 weeks. And what's happened here? This is the Fed probabilities chart of what they're going to do. So the column I'm looking at is here. This is the current rate. Basically, this week you said he's going to give a speech. 100% chance of them doing nothing. 90% chance of them doing nothing in July. 70% chance of doing nothing in September and onward. And last week I was telling you that the next highest probability is in December, and it's for a hike. You can see that it's at 42.8% for a hike in December. That's come down in the past week since I talked to you. What's also come down is, there was a chance for 2 quarter point hikes higher than this 2 weeks ago. This was something like 20% over here. All
Correct.
that has gone over to here, and it's basically a coin flip of them doing nothing all the way until December, which is what you're saying. Maybe not cut, but certainly maintain rates where they are, and the market is pricing in less chance of a hike now than they were even a week ago as the oil prices come down and everything you just said. Jobs really were never that bad to begin with, but you've got some pretty good jobs numbers coming out, et cetera. And so, yeah, he's likely going to acknowledge that the inflation is high. He's going to tell you what Scott Bessent has been telling you. I mean, they have the same talking points, right? And Trump as well. I was watching him on Trump did a really long interview on Meet the Press over the weekend. I don't know if you had a chance to catch that. It was a pretty long interview, 20, 30 minutes. Oil prices are going to come down like you've never seen, Gerardo. They're going to fall like a stone. And he's been right in that respect so far. And that's going to give the Fed cover to delay, 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 and maybe not cut, but definitely talk about the need not to hike.
Volatility index in the oil space and in the gold space. What are you seeing there, Nick? I know you follow that, and I know you did a brilliant job, I think a month or so ago, of explaining what the gold volatility index was and how it had been moving against, gold, indicating that there was going to be some near-term pressure in the price. It looks to me like the opposite is true now. What do you see there?
Well, start with oil. I mean, I was actually looking at the oil volatility today because I was putting together an editorial, and when I was, it peaked at 120, basically. It started the year at I got to move to see what the right side of my chart. Started the year at about 30 or 31, and it's the same scale as the VIX. So just think about it in those terms. Started the year at about 30, spiked to 120 when the Iran war started. And then it's been coming down ever since, really, the middle of March. When I was writing the foundational profits issue last week, it was at about 59. It was still elevated. And then yesterday, or the past couple of days, when we got, you know, news of the end of the war, went down to 47. But just in the past day, is up now to 52. And that's still significantly elevated. I mean, 52, if we had 52 VIX, I mean, people would be shitting their pants, right? So the oil volatility is still significantly elevated. It's been cut in half since the peak earlier this year. But there's still some trepidation, I would say, in terms of the swings that oil could do. And you mentioned the infrastructure that we destroyed. Like, some of that stuff's going to take 4 or 5 years to rebuild, especially on the gas side of things and Qatar and stuff like that. So let me go over to GVZ, which is the gold volatility index. And that spiked here in the past 2 weeks as we had the sell-off in gold spike to 32, but it's come down to 25. And that's really the near the lowest level of the year. The lowest it's been this year is at 23 and change. That's where it started the year. And it cuts both ways, right? Because when the price goes up, or when the volatility goes up, as I've explained, the price can swing wider. So back in January and February, when gold was and silver rocketing higher to $5,000 an ounce, you had a gold volatility index that was up around 45. That's been nearly cut in half to 25 as well. But it should tell you that maybe gold's not going to go back to 5,000 anytime soon, but it's not going to break down is what it's telling me. You're not going to get any more wild swings to the downside. And that's really good. Like, these companies are going to be printing money at $4,300, $4,400 gold. And again, I'll take that all day long.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more. Copper.
And then I guess one more thing. Sorry. Yeah. Well, you can do copper if you want, but the VIX for the S&P, the volatility index, I mean, that's just, it's come down to almost year-to-date lows as well. It's down at 16. It was up around 30 when the war started. And the S&P is within striking distance of new highs. What I would note is that we're starting to see rotation. We're starting to see maybe not softness in the tech space, but a little bit. Other sectors like healthcare, even real estate has been doing better as the rates have started to come down. And yes, we had a massive SpaceX IPO, but names like Netflix aren't as bullish as they were, and a couple of other names. And so there's a lot of uncertainty out there. If there's not a lot of volatility, which there's not, I think there's a lot of uncertainty and there's a lot of sector rotation as we talk about an oscillation in growth. And we talk about an oscillation in inflation, which just inflated and is now going to disinflate for the next couple of months and likely head back up higher after that.
Yeah, no, and I was just going to say ditto for copper, in my opinion, and everything we just said about gold and everything we said about silver looks the same to me for copper. The bottom line is we're going to need a whole heck of a lot more copper than what's being mined and produced right now. And you know, this recent war sure in the heck doesn't do anything, unfortunately, to deter that or take away from the demand that's going to be pent up and built up.
Copper had an all-time weekly close, all-time high weekly close last week. It doesn't get more bullish than that, right?
It does not get more bullish than that. What else do you want to get into, Nick? It's been a crazy week, but it's been a crazy week all year. I mean, every week seems to get crazier than the one before. You know, you had this event at the White House that ended with, you know, some dumbass fighter making a slur about Michelle Obama being a man on national television. And it's just like, again, it's so indicative of where we are right now. Just, you know, but look, it's been crazy. You mentioned SpaceX and you mentioned sector rotation. Sector rotation, for those of you that are newish to the space or just newish to the podcast, is very simply things get overbought. The flavor of the month becomes the flavor of the year, becomes the flavor of the last 3 years. And eventually you hit valuations that are so high that they just don't make sense to continue to allocate capital to them. So you start taking profits and you find undervalued sectors that have opportunities to reinvest that capital while mitigating the risk. That is where we're at with the precious metals and the metals in general, right? We're starting to see it from some of the institutions and some of the funds that are, you know, they write weekly notes, sometimes daily notes, and you're starting to see analysts coming out, respected analysts coming out and saying a sector rotation into the metals is overdue and it's absolutely merited at current levels. If you look at gold stock valuations, if you look at producers, I dabble mostly on the exploration side of things with a few development companies that are exceptions to that rule. But you dabble across the board and in all sectors. So I'm curious to hear your take on this SpaceX IPO that has been thus far, by the way, very successful in terms of percentage returns. Thoughts on where we are with sector rotation, whether you think that's sustainable, because other big names have started to at least slow down. I don't want to say break down, but you mentioned Netflix and some of the other names. They've at least started to slow down.
Hang on. Let me go over here for 1 second. We talked pretty long about SpaceX last week. We were talking. Yeah, we were talking about how it was opening up to retail. You were talking about how it was being crowdfunded. I'm looking at just some short-term charts here. Amazon relatively bearish, Meta relatively bearish, Google bullish, Netflix bearish, Tesla bearish, Nvidia bullish. So a mixed bag there. And then if I look at the actual sectors, for the year, IT has been the best sector, the information technology sector of the S&P, up 33% for the year, which is crazy because that all came in just the past 3 months. Like in March, I was looking because I was putting together my call-in notes for foundational profits. In March, the S&P was down like 4.5%, and now it's up 10%. So that's all come in the past 3 months since the war started. But anyway, IT, best performing sector of the year, energy second, materials third. But here's the rotation I was talking about. If I look in 1 month, I already mentioned healthcare is the second best performing sector. And in just the past week, what you were saying, materials is the best performing sector in the past 5 days. So sectors that weren't getting bought before, like healthcare, for example, for the year is the third worst sector, but it's the best sector or second best sector over the past month. So a lot of shiftiness out there. And I think that has to do with the inflation that I already mentioned, and the yields, which I already mentioned, are softening as well. I think you'll see real estate start to do better, and healthcare, which I already mentioned. Back to the SpaceX IPO, I mean, it was huge. You saw, we've talked about Gina Rinehart a lot on this podcast. She put $1 billion into the SpaceX IPO, and we had a couple of families over the house swimming this weekend, and one of the guys is a financial advisor, and he was saying, for the first time in a long time, he had several clients calling him requesting allocations to like a specific equity, in this case, SpaceX. Like they wanted him to enter orders to participate in the SpaceX IPO. So I don't know what that portends for sectors. I don't know how much of that relates to AI. People felt like they missed AI, or they didn't have a big enough allocation to that explosion or that bubble, however you want to view it. And they think, you know, space, as they say, is the next frontier, or if they think they're getting exposure to AI in that sense. But I mean, it was clearly huge. Is already one of the largest companies in the world. Minted the first trillionaire, by the way, happened as that thing came to list last year. And so I don't know, that's about it for my talking points for SpaceX. But I think as the inflation softens here in the next couple of months, you'll see money going into other sectors for sure.
Agreed. Yeah, no, make a list, folks. Check it, make sure you have exposure to the things that you want to be exposed to. June is a phenomenal time to add to positions if you're going to do so while everybody's outside and people aren't paying attention, right? And again, there's a lot of quality exploration being done out there right now that I think in the next several months is going to be richly, richly, richly rewarded.
You asked me if there's anything else I wanted to talk about. I wouldn't mind talking about nuclear and uranium just for 1 second before we get into the bizarre world.
Yep.
And I won't spend too long. But it had a fairly strong sell-off recently. I was telling you, I was buying some of the larger Uranian names in the past week or two, and that's worked out pretty well. You know, the Denisons of the world, et cetera, bounced 10, 15%, as they've rebounded here. But there's a lot to like in the nuclear space. One of the things we haven't covered was the startup, and this ties to July 4th, by the way. There was not a mandate, but a goal to get four small modular reactors reaching criticality, you know, up and running, essentially producing more power than they consume. And the goal was to get those done from the Energy Department by July 4th. We had the first one, which is from a company called Antares, reach criticality in the past couple of weeks here. And what else was I reading about? I'm going to jump a little bit all over the place, but you know, China has started two new reactors already in 2026. I think they started construction on five in 2025, and they're set to pass the U.S. as the largest nuclear country in the world here in the next 4 years by 2030. So coming on really strong, and there's a difference, and I got to scroll to my notes so I get it right, but there's a difference in the type of fuel they consume, and I've been spending a little time reading about this sort of stuff. Do I have my notes up here? Yeah, here we go. So this new one that just fired up, the Antares reactor, or from the company's called Antares, it uses a fuel called TRISO, TRISO, and it stands for tri-structural isotropic. And the ISO is an important takeaway there. This isn't a fuel pellet, as you'll know it. Right now we make the fuels in pellet shape, and then we stack them end to end in the fuel rods, and that's what's the fuel source for the reactors that we have now. This is they call it not a grain of sand, but a little bit larger than that, like a pebble, like a poppy seed or something like that. Of it says right here, I'll just read it: a microparticle nuclear fuel designed to be virtually meltdown proof. Each poppy seed-sized particle contains a uranium fuel core encased in ceramic and carbon layers that act as tiny individual containment vessels. And it's in like a matrix of graphite. So it requires other critical metals to get these things going. It still requires uranium, obviously, as we bring these new things online. And there's just a lot of bullish underpinnings in the nuclear sector, which is the main thing I wanted to highlight. And then I guess a freebie, as I've been looking around here, one of the companies that does these fuels was Centrus. And do I have that chart up? No, but I can look at it for 1 second. That's LEU. And this is a stock that had a heck of a run over the past couple of years. This was a $25 stock in 23, 2024, $25, and it ran to over
Whew.
$450. And there's, in 2025, 2025. And these fuel companies, I think, are going to be the new darlings of the market. And there's a couple of them. I'm not going to give them all away here now because I'm doing some research, and I'd like to recommend them and buy them first. But and speaking of sector rotation, this is like internal sector rotation. Like, go look at a chart of NuScale, which lots of folks were talking about in the past couple of years, or Oklo, for example. Those charts are down and to the right. And if you look at the charts of some of these fuel producers, these isotope manufacturers, and there's a handful of them as well, they're doing a little bit better. And I think that's where the retail dollars are going to go, and that's where the interest is going to go, because it's tough to pick which technology is going to win. I mentioned this Antares company, and there's a couple of other ones that we know about, right? TerraPower, Oklo, I mentioned NuScale, and there's even more than that are using different sorts of technologies for the reactors. But at the end of the day, they all need these fuel inputs, right? And so that bodes well for uranium, yes, but also for these individual not uranium miners, but fuel and pellet and poppy seed producers, for example. So I just wanted to get that on the record and get that out as one of the topics for this week, so you guys could do some more research.
Yeah, no, I well said, well articulated, and a fascinating space, obviously, right? It's the changes and the developments are so interesting in that space. And again, when we look at demand, when we look at what the trend is. It's clear as all day the direction that the trend is going into. So boring is the opportunity, folks. Again, we said we were going to sound like a broken record this week, in part because we just did one of these 3 or 4 days ago, but that is what it is. It is, the trend is your friend, and it is that time of the year where things are just absolutely on sale. Go get you some if you haven't topped off your list. That's all I got for the non-premium portion of the podcast. Anything else that you want to highlight there? Anything else you want to chat about?
No, I know you've got an interview, so I'll save my Pope AI encyclical and Catholic Church and iPhone birth control for another week.
Oh, no, we got to get into that. We're not letting
It's going to take too long. We can get into the premium portion. We'll do it next week when we're live, and then I can read up a little bit more about it. So, no, let's do the premium portion.
That's all I got for this week. We'll see you next week at the regularly scheduled time and day. And so appreciate everyone coming out and joining us today. Have a great week, y'all. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 369th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Don't get stuck in sewer tunnels out there, folks. Watch your surroundings. Take care and have a great week, everyone.
We'll have to get into that as well. Happy Juneteenth and happy Father's Day to all you out there, and to you too, Gerardo.
Same your way, sir. Have a good one, everybody.